The tests are brutal. The failures, humbling. The pressure, relentless. In this life, there are many things we don't know. But we know for certain the road to CASA is not an easy one. And so, you often wonder on this journey, is the CASA dream actually worth it? Then somewhere between the late nights and early mornings, the breakdowns and breakthroughs, something shifts. Not just your marks, but your mindset. What if the real qualification on this journey is who you become along the way? Today, we are joined by Roshan Parbudas, postgraduate diploma in accounting sciences student at the University of Pretoria. We chat about how your university studies and the overall CA journey shapes not just our minds, but our mettle, our character that enables us to become the difference makers of tomorrow. We also chat about how to exit your comfort zone and expand your social circles, language appropriate for cultivating a growth mindset, the three types of failure and why you must increase your good failure rate, the ramp model for dealing with failure, his COVID-19 health transformation, and more. I hope you enjoy. My travelers on the road to CASA. Very quick one this week. I was just reflecting on the first two quarters, looking back at what is something formative and foundational in terms of cultivating success in this degree, right? In this academic journey. And I realized that I was goal-oriented and not systems-oriented or habit-oriented. The problem with this is goals are things you either hit or you don't. Habits are the things that you do to get to the goals. Systems are the processes that produce the results. And so if you are goal-oriented, you will not hit the result per se. However, if you are habit-oriented, you're far more likely. You can extrapolate a habit. You can see what happens if you carry on with a habit. If you carry on sleeping late or sleeping at times that don't align with your life, you can extrapolate that to being burnt out during the test. You can't extrapolate getting 60 or not. You either hit it or you don't. And so, just a quick shift, I think, in spirit of even this incredible episode about developing your character, focus on the systems, focus on the habits, mental habits, the routines, etc. But the conversation definitely does complement this. Guys, enjoy it. On to the episode. Welcome back, my people. This is the Road to CA podcast, the show for aspiring chartered accountants to inspire, empower, and inform the difference makers of tomorrow. Today, we're joined by a big picture thinker, and I've always seen a little something in his eyes that, you know, there's more to than meets the eye with this guy. So I've really been anticipating this conversation with you, man. He is a refreshingly open mind who loves to learn from others and broaden his perspective. He's the first in his family to attend university, man. We're going to chat about that. Yes, mama, we made it. We're on a podcast. He's a third-year BCom Accounting Science student at the University of Pretoria. He's a people's person. He's a, and I quote, a lot more approachable than people think and is willing to help or advise where he can. He likes to gym, most importantly, and run and play some cricket as well. But we're going to chat about some more of the stuff he does. He's a chilled oak. We're joined by Roshan Barbudas.
Oh, thank you, my brother. Yo, it's an honor to be part of your journey and part of the podcast. And yeah, I'm looking forward to this episode.
Part of the journey, man. Part of the journey. I love how every single time I meet with someone, and you mentioned how you like to learn about new perspectives. This journey is, it's every moment like I have with like people like you, it's making the road wider. And I appreciate what you're saying, being part of this journey, because you are part of this journey, man. You are part of this journey.
And it's good to be part of someone else's journey, because at the end of the road, you're going to look back and look at who's part of your journey, who was there with you. And I'm like, to have someone like you, Alunga, yo, it's a nice passenger to have on the way, you know?
God of life. No, man, this is going to be fantastic. Okay, let's go back. Let's go back. This is what we do at the Road to CA. We go back in time. We're going to rewind. Where did this whole CA thing begin for you, Roshan?
So, yeah, I'm from a very small town, Witbank, as some people might know. And I think back in grade 10 or so, we were going on an aptitude test thing, but like the whole grade was going. And a lot of people were very excited, but I didn't really know, like, you know, why are people so excited? I mean, you know what your passions are, you know what you should do in life. And then I was like, I don't understand, why are people so excited? So then I took a step back and went behind a screen and I did what everyone really does. Top 10 highest paid jobs in South Africa. And then CA came up and I was like, oh, accounting. I'm good at accounting. This thing can't be that hard. And I had no idea what I was signing up for at that point. And then, you know, I was like, I'll get my degree, 3 years, go work somewhere. Sorted. That was my understanding of it. I was like, you get paid a lot, you do accounting, and I like numbers. It was very simple at the time. But then, yeah, as life went on, got to matric, then I started hearing about Big Four and I was like, yo, okay, as an accountant, go join a Big Four firm. And then, you know, life sorted. Nice building, nice people to work with, you earn the money.
These Big Four buildings, they're huge, bro.
Exactly. And that was the goal. And then after a while I realized, hey, but you know, to do this thing, you need to do honors as well. Now I was like, okay, now this journey became 4 years. I was like, now from 3 to 4, no, I can still accept that. Just 1 year extra. It's not too bad. Then I found out there's articles and 2 board exams.
Yo!
Now this thing became life-changing. And I was like, if I weigh up being an accountant versus being a doctor, I was like, now what's the real difference? I mean, it's 7 years here, 7 years there. You get to more or less the same amount of money. And I was like, you know what? Let me go down this route of CA, because there's one thing that makes this thing very different. And in a country where unemployment is so high, to have a job where you're constantly getting offers, that just sold me on it. I was like, why would I not choose to constantly get opportunities? You know? And now I'm here. And it's been a journey. First year was very awakening for me. I was humbled into this program, but now I'm at a point where, you know, I understand the journey.
Yeah.
I understand the goals I need to meet. And I look forward to starting my career, because I don't know how much thought you put into your intro, but that line of it begins, what do you say? It doesn't end in CA.
It will not end, because we always say it will end in CA. I think it was just so short-minded. So
yeah, you know. But that phrase is my entire motivation at the moment, because I think once you hit that goal, it just opens up doors for you. Yeah. And then you can go out there and make a change. You can go out there and do whatever you want. The world is literally your oyster.
It will begin in CASA. No, bro. obviously, you're speaking my language. Like, that's ours. That's our whole message and our whole point of this. You mentioned, like, dude, yo, this thing is humbling, hey?
Yeah.
I love the word you use, because I think, like, there's even this misconception that top students don't feel nervous. Like, especially when you get to post-grad, which... I was chatting with the guys. It's like traumatizing, but it's also so grounding. I think it's such a grounding experience, because you realize that, hey, man, like, these topics are not supposed to be easy. It's not supposed to be easy to become a chartered accountant. And it's so important to come in humble, to know, like, this world is vast. The topics are vast. They're not easy. Like, to be able to add value it was never going to be easy to start with.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, because if you think about it, we're sitting in class with some of the greatest minds at our age level, right? And, you know, once you realize that, just talk to the person next to you and realize, listen, these people have goals. And to become a CASA, like, you need to understand that big picture thinking, how to add value. And all these people in our class, we know how to add value. So that's the exciting thing about going on this path.
We have the capacity, I think.
Yeah, and no matter how
hard, learn, you know.
Yeah, and it's going to be hard. It's going to be challenging. It's not going to be smooth sailing, but we are built for rough storms, and we will make it through.
Yeah,
CASA.
Yeah, man, we're getting built every day. That test, that paper, it's building us. It's building your character. That 40, it's building your character. You know,
character development is like a whole different thing here at university. Everything they do, it's there to develop you as a character. It's there for a reason.
I mean, the test on Monday, dude. That's developing my character right now. The last test, the financial management test, it was so new. And like my immediate response was like, what? Why did they do this? You know, like it's always immediately you want to let go of the locus of control. You want to have that external locus of control. But no, truth be told, everything is in your power. And actually, that was a good experience. I think like reframing it as an intelligent failure, because I think it's a topic that I'm going to get into later. Reviewing these things where you're trying new stuff as intelligent failures, discoveries, as opposed to bad, you know, things you should avoid like the plague. It's so key, because you're meant to suck at first. If it's new, you're meant to suck.
And I think another thing that goes with that is like you have to learn how to be comfortable in uncomfortable situations. And this on Monday was a perfect example of how you had to learn how to be comfortable. It was something we've never seen before. We had no idea what to do, but you had to just figure it out. I mean, you could have sat there stressing yourself out, writing a whole bunch of nothing, but you could have also just taken a step back, realized, hey, listen, I just need to be comfortable in this situation and you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. You also spoke just now about bigger picture thinking. You're a bigger picture thinker. What is the bigger picture now that you're in the journey, you're on the road? For me, it definitely happened where there was so much more that I didn't know. You know, like you come into the course, you just Google top paying salary and you see this thing and you sort of see, okay, this is where I can go, big four, what. What's now the bigger picture for you?
So when I initially came in, I kind of had this idea of, I'm going to get this thing, and then I want to go overseas. I was like, going overseas is one of those things where the grass looks greener on the other side. So I was like, I want to do this. But then recently, I actually went through the Steinhoff debacle again. I went through the whole thing, right?
Yeah. Did you read the book or did you
watch
the
Initially, when it first happened, I read like articles and things like that. I haven't had the chance to read the book. And then recently, I've been able to watch the documentary, Steinhoff.
Yeah.
And then I realized, I was like, we have responsibility, not just to crunch numbers.
Mm.
We've got responsibility to other people. And I realized this because in that whole thing, the line that hit me the most was that people lost pension funds.
Mm.
And I was like, it's scary to know that we are responsible for some people's pension funds.
Livelihood.
Exactly. Because they could come to the day where they want to cash out. And then all of a sudden, some CA caused fraud or did something wrong, and now we've cost them their livelihood, right? So my goal now is obviously to get to the qualification, make it through. But instead of going overseas, I want to stay in South Africa and try and make a difference, because I feel it will bring more fulfillment to me knowing that I was able to make some sort of impact here. And I don't know, for me, the biggest thing is education and the power to education as well as opportunity. And I feel like the more people that have understanding of, you know, if you study a good degree, not just CA, any other good degree, you've got the power to change our economy. And we are the generation to do that.
Yeah.
So it's a very patriarchal thing.
I love it, dude.
Yeah.
I love it.
Instead of going overseas, my entire idea shifted to, I want to stay here and try and make this place better.
Mm. I'm going to do the same. Yeah. I'm going to do the same. And I love that patriotism, dude. I think it's been dying out in South Africa. the knowing, like not just having pride to wear your SA jersey at the South African rugby game, not just that, but what are you plowing back into the soil?
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, I think one day when I've got more resources or access to resources, I'd like to, like, I come from a small town, like I said before, and I feel like a lot of people don't understand the opportunities out there in the world. So I think just by giving them that knowledge and saying, listen, if you invest into your knowledge now, into your education now, to the best of your ability, it will pay off down the line. Yeah. I don't know how soon it will be for you, but at some point it will pay off for you and your family. So it's one of those things where people just need that spark, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you just leave someone there, nothing's going to happen. But you just need to give someone that spark to ignite that flame inside of them. And then people will come out and show their character. And then those are difference makers, regardless of your profession. If you come up with a spark and character, then you are sorted.
True, dude. And it even comes back to this idea that I posed in the Lost Leader episode about how... So this was in the context of failure, but how sharing your story is not just good for you to learn, but it's also good for others learning through your story that it's possible. When you go back to the small town, that small town where you thought that, you know, all you needed was a salary, and you go back and you tell everyone, guys, there's more. There's more than even just that salary. There's higher earning capacity. There's higher impact capacity. You are showing people that it's possible.
And I fully agree with that. I mean, it's all about that ability to go out there and do it. First, you're not going to believe someone who hasn't done it. So you need to first do it yourself, build some credibility, and then you come back and then you can show people dreams and say, look, this is what you can do in life. Go for it and you'll achieve it.
Yeah, dude. And you bloody can. Yeah. I know you. Yeah, you. Yes. I'm talking to you. Not Roshan. You listening to this. Dude, what's your comfort zone? I was curious. You mentioned exiting your comfort zone. What is, would you say, your comfort zone? And like, where, how, cause I don't think we should go too far outside our comfort zones, as in, like, what is a great way to say this? I think growth is most sustainable just outside, but I just was curious, what's yours?
So when I first came here, my comfort zone was very much, I had friends from high school and they were all back in Tux, right? They all came here. So I was like, okay, cool. These are people I know, whatever. I'm comfortable here. But then I realized in our class, we've got so many great minds.
Mm.
Talking to these people helped. But my problem is I didn't identify this early enough. So it took me a while to make that realization. But I think something I struggled with in first year was putting myself out there in terms of, I made friends with a lot of people, but I didn't really get to know why they're here or what's their journey. So then I started like going deeper with people and finding out like, listen, why are you here? What is your goal? What is your purpose? How are you going to do this? That, and I also didn't know about the amount of things UP offers, you know, like, back in high school, I did public speaking and things like that. And I was like, you know, it's a great way to go out there and like prove to other people like, listen, I can do this. And I'm uncomfortable the first time, but it gets better. And it happened in first year. I made the top 10 for the project or something.
Oh, wow.
And we got there and there were judges. And we had to present to them and everything.
Practical. Was it KPMG or EY?
KPMG, right?
KPMG EY,
yeah. And the first person went up, did their presentation. And the judge asked them a question. I was like, you know what? That was a good question from the judge, but maybe it was just this one sort of question. Next person went up and the question got even higher. Like it was a higher level question. I was like, oh, okay, maybe I'm a bit out of depth here. And eventually I got there and I was nervous. I won't lie. I was genuinely nervous. And I was like, if I just put myself in this position a lot more by maybe signing up to more programs that UP has to offer or taking part in more things, I would have been more comfortable expressing what I wanted to express on the day.
Dude, that's a powerful lesson to learn at that point, eh?
So it was a, like, that experience was quite scary because I thought I was able to.
I got there. Because you did public speaking. Yeah, so, I did have spoke.
Exactly. I thought I had it and then I got there and then I got really nervous and I was like, maybe I should take a step back and maybe try something else. But at that, like I said, I just realized it a bit too late, but I think had I known sooner, I should have just gotten involved in a lot more things. Even like, I know how CA, I came to one of your events when I was back in first year. And I was like, I wonder how this committee forms. Like, I was just like, are they just a random bunch of individuals that come together and do this thing? But yeah. I was like, by putting yourself out there, you get that exposure. And I should have identified that sooner and then try to go that route.
So it sounds like for you, that comfort zone was firstly the people around you. Yeah, because I think that that's like a lot of us. A lot of us want to stick to that familiar people, especially from high school. I'm sure there's people still in third year that are clinging to their first year friends or their high school friends if they're yeah. like blessed enough to have high school friends, because some people come alone.
Yeah.
But that exiting the comfort zone was figuring out like there's actually other people.
Yeah, and the thing
there's
is
more.
You learn to outgrow, like some relationships you outgrow, not by force, it's just well, it's one yeah. of those things that happen. Like
yeah.
like I said, you're a certain caliber of person that comes here. And the level of thinking you apply, it's just like some relationships you get outgrown, and it's one of those things. You just have to be comfortable with it.
Yeah, and it's not a judgment thing, hey. I identify with this so much. Like I even think about some of my high school friends about how I just can't talk to you about, you know, the party. I just can't. It's just not where my mind is right now.
Yeah, it's one of those, it's like a mind shift. Your mind shifts completely from one area of focus to a different one, and you have to get comfortable with that.
Like there's always a moment where we just can't talk. It's like, you guys just want to talk about, that party, that girl, that hand. I'm like, but dude, like, what about value? What value creation? What assets are we building? And you even spoke about education being a power. A thought that came to my mind was this idea of the S&P. So people want to invest in the S&P 500. This guy, Alex Omozi, he's a business dude. He says, we should rather invest in the S&ME 500. We should invest in ourselves, because when we think of ourselves as the number one asset to invest in, there's seldom a moment where we will not get a return on, you know, investing in our education, investing in knowledge, investing in our networks. And I see the S in me being also that idea of exiting your comfort zone. Every time that you chat with that person in your class that you otherwise wouldn't have, because like, you're not going to just go and talk. Like, you have to like think, okay, I'm going to do it. You have to exit that comfort zone. The moment that you actually do, like, have you ever regretted exiting your comfort zone?
I'll be honest, right? Uh-huh. I don't ever regret it. But there have been certain situations where you talk to someone and then you don't really feel that connect. Or, you know, it doesn't always work out. But it's it's life. It's one of those things. You just have to be okay with it and say, this is not going to ruin me. Just go to the next person and see what happens there, you know? Because everybody has something to add, right? And I think the more that you can get out of a person, right, it just adds value to yourself as well. I've spoken to some people and I've realized, like, I thought I was a big picture thinker. Then I talk to some people and I'm like, these people are even bigger, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, I love it, because then I get to expand my horizons. Like, for example, I didn't know there was any other option besides Big Four. And then the more I started talking to people, I was like, there's medium-sized firms. Then there's like, you can start your own thing. And I was like, all these things, they add value, because now you know there's more options out there.
Yeah.
And if somebody doesn't want to share with you, it's fine. Talk to the next person. The next person might be even better, you know? But you should never regret putting yourself out there and learning about other people.
I hear you, dude.
And it's not always comfortable. Like, you know, if somebody doesn't connect with you, you know, how do you move past that? But it's fine. It's just one of those things. Put it behind you and move forward.
This even gets into like this idea that of intelligent failures. Like, you know how in school, I think that the system, it's not built well. But in school, we get reprimanded for making certain mistakes. We get reprimanded for failing, like, oh, you got this answer wrong. Punishment. And that leads us to fearing doing out of the box things. And I think like the whole thing of getting out your comfort zone, I feel like
we need to promote more of the trying by, one, adjusting our language. I think there's language is a really important thing in terms of the mindset. Instead of saying, I'm not smart, you can say, I'm not smart yet. Instead of saying, I'm very bad at ice skating, yeah, but you're actually not good yet. You know, you're bad now. You will improve over time. And when you change that language, you can also start changing your relationship with doing badly. I also feel like there's the language. There's also the people around you. I feel like when there's negative people around you, it's toxic, dude.
Yeah, I'm glad you actually mentioned the language and the people around you. Like, one of the other words also I hate when people use this is I can't.
Yo.
I can't is such... I hate that word with the passion. Yeah. Right? And yeah. I wouldn't even lie. I spoke to one of your guests the other day and we were talking. And he said like he was surprised that someone like me would talk to someone like him. And I was like, why would you be surprised?
Why?
Exactly. And I was like, why? And then he told me and he started off and he was like, I can't. Mm. And I haven't told him yet, but he knows who he is. And on the inside, I'm very angry with him. I was like, he should never have that mindset because like you said, that frame of mind is so important. I think if you put yourself in a negative mind with toxic people and they're always saying, oh, you're going to fail or this is not going to go well, then every bad mark you get is going to be confirmation. You're going to look at that and say, this bad mark is proving my mindset of I'm going to fail. Mm. But if you switch that around and you say, I failed, but I plan on improving or I'm going to do better, just that small switch is going to do wonders.
Mm. There was this funny, very funny video, but now I see when you're talking about this, it was so bloody toxic. It was this guy who was saying, yo, guys. I think he was telling a story about how he was approaching a girl and he got like this crazy bet. And he was like, ah, Guababa's your friend, guys. Guababa's your friend. Don't. And I'm like, dude, that is so toxic because Guababa's not your friend. Like on the other side of Guababa is so much opportunity. Yes, you might get the rejection or two. Yes, you might not click with a person that first time. But man, the endless joys, the endless opportunities that lie on the other side. Don't let that language stop you.
Exactly.
I think another thing is not rewarding trying out new things. Because I think the system makes you think that when you get that rejection. Yeah, that's why. Yeah, you suck, dude. Goodness gracious, you have no game. Don't do that ever again. Don't approach that. No. In fact, you should say, wow, I flippin' tried. I studied so hard for that test. Yes, I got 40, but man, this deserves a meal, because the work I put in, I need to reward myself. And that way we change our relationship with trying. Because if you try and fail, that's not failure. That's not failure.
So then you're just achieving your goal.
Yeah.
You set out for.
Look, I think if we define failure, it's having a goal and then not meeting it. So I think we fail a lot. Like, we'll say, I want to get 60 for this test. You get 50. It's a failure. But it's like, was it the right failure? And I think, so it gets into this idea of these three types of failure. Professor Amy Edmondson of Harvard University, she's one of the preemptive scientists on the study of how to fail well. She's actually categorized failure into three main buckets. And there's actually a good failure and there's a bad failure. So the first two buckets, they are typically bad. And then the last bucket is good. So the first two is one, simple failures. These are your mistakes. These are a routine environment, a familiar environment. And despite you being in that familiar environment that you know how to do things in, you make a mistake. You fail. You know that you need to make sure that you write statement of profit or loss and the company name at the top. You forget to. That's a simple failure. You know that you need to ensure Yeah, you get simple failures.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Second one is complex failure. This one's the sinister one that
it's hard to grasp and it's hard to really get through. But this is characterized typically by not having one reason. So it's usually multi-sourced. It's usually, sometimes there's a factor of external controls. So sometimes the failure wasn't all you. But it's not to say that you don't have control of anything. Like,
yeah.
You tend to have a place, but these ones are the ones where one little thing plus another little thing plus another 100 little things equals a huge disaster. And then the last one is intelligent failures. Those are discoveries. Those are trying out new things and finding out something else. You know, not getting the results that you set, but getting something else. And that's the good failure. So in the context of accounting, simple failures, they are there because you didn't practice, typically.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's there. It's staring you in the face.
It's there. And like, sometimes you just didn't do enough questions. So you just didn't know that struggle with the recon. You know, like, if you did more questions, you would know that you didn't depreciate this asset properly. You didn't first take off the impairment, then the depreciation. You used to do depreciation, then the impairment, or the other way around. I'm actually getting it wrong myself. But that can be remedied through practice. So I have a framework for this. RAMP. You need to ramp up your failure rates. That's what I say.
Okay.
You need to reduce the simple errors, the simple failures by practicing. If you practice, you're going to make less of them. And then in terms of complex errors, those things that are like 100 million things, you didn't sleep, your car was low and you needed to go fill up petrol, this, that, there's all these reasons. And then the teacher gave you that hectic test. You failed. That's a complex. There we need to anticipate them and mitigate them. The way we anticipate them is, and this is, I think this is a life-changing idea. We need to understand the system of things and understand that nothing exists in isolation because of second order consequences. I'm going to explain that through an example. I have a test tomorrow. I've got a CEV, like yesterday, or the 2 days before. I have not, or rather, let's say in a week, I have a test in 7 days' time. So you've got some time. I've not been adequately studying. I think I can study a bit more. I need to catch up this, catch up that. So what I'm going to do is this week, I'm going to work until 2 every day because I need to get the stuff in. I need to cram the stuff. I need to get through all the content. So first order consequence. You get through everything and you pass. Wow, you've solved the problem. You've solved, I got through it. I passed the test. Second order consequence, the information goes out the other side because you didn't sleep enough for the information to be consolidated. If you guys don't know about sleep and its importance, go search it, go Google it. There's like scores of literature on sleep and its importance.
Yeah.
When you eat that KFC that one day, you're hungry, you're craving a little bit, first order consequence, solve it, just eat the burger. Second order consequence, now you know that your diet's been going well, you know that when you off your diet, you're going to go off on a binging spree. If you think about the binging, if you think about, this is not a burger, this is a death sentence, this is a death wish, this burger. You understand the second order consequence. And so that's how we can mitigate those complex failures. I mean, anticipate. Mitigating them is, the way we do that is we create psychological safety. So she's also this lady, Amy Edmondson, she's also the preemptive scientist on this idea of psychological safety, which is basically an environment where it's okay to fail and make mistakes. So if you come from a home of being reprimanded for doing things badly or an abusive relationship,
you tend to not have psychological safety. And I think, like, especially in accounting, there's a lot of that culture of you feel it. You feel like, yo, I can't put up my hand and say something. If I say something stupid, I'm going to look stupid in front of everyone. There's no psychological safety in the class.
Yeah, I understand that. You know? And sometimes you'll put your hand up and you'll say something. And then the lecturer will say something back and you'll say, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Yeah.
I was very, very wrong. But
it's sore though, hey?
It's sore, but it's sore for all of 5 seconds. But then you have to find a way to move forward. It's going to sting for 5 seconds, but it's not going to burn.
Mm. What I think we can work on though is creating more psychological safety. So we can talk about the lecture halls. I think teachers can do better with psychological safety, but I think they're also in ourselves. I think when we have more grace, because we put this pressure on ourselves to not make a mistake, even though this is the first time we're doing this, we're applying this principle. Like, how could you be so insensitive to yourself?
Yeah, it comes down to, like I said, the caliber of person. Like, you're just going to, throughout your entire career, you've obviously done well.
Mm.
So you're going to put that extra bit of pressure on yourself. But I think at the end of the day, it's like you said, it's your first time.
It's your first time.
You're learning something brand new. Like, give yourself grace.
Mm.
Be patient with yourself as long as you understand how you're going forward.
Mm. So actually, on that, I think a great way to create that psychological safety to further enforce it is to pee. So on the ramp, pee is to promote intelligent failures. So promote trying out new things. Literally reward yourself. Take a sweet, if a sweet's your thing. Take a sweet. Don't actually, because I know people study with sweets. Don't eat the sweet. Say you're not allowed to have a sweet until you've done that question. And I said do the question, not like look at the memo and do the question. Because that's a dangerous game. You've actually done the question and you've made all the mistakes. You put on that timer, 1.5 minutes per mark, blah, 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 blah. And then you fail and you see, yo, I got 3 out of 10 or whatever it was, which makes sense. It's your first time. Give yourself a sweet. Reward trying out that new thing. Reward trying out waking up at 5 for a week by going and, I don't know, buying yourself a new pair of shoes or buying yourself a new shirt. Treat yourself right for trying out new things. So if we ramp up our failures, I believe we can learn to fail well.
And that's powerful because I think failing well, or failing is incidental to this journey. Mm. You are going to fail. At some point, you're going to have failures.
It's incidental.
Yeah, it's going to be there. But like you said, you just have to be comfortable with failure.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to understand that you're failing because you're trying something new, which is a good thing.
It's a good thing.
Exactly.
That's good failure. There's bad failure.
Yeah, like you said.
It's a bad one.
Good and bad, but you're failing in a good way. You're failing forwards, which is good for you as a person.
Mm. Mm. You are a brother in failure as well. First year was your time. What did you learn from that?
Yeah, so first year was challenging. I split first year up into two semesters. It was semester one of just pure failing.
Yeah, yeah.
And semester two of passing really, really well in order to make up
fix it.
For semester one. But it was scary. I mean, I wrote LO1. Mm-hmm. It was the first class test for those of you not
was
at
it
UP.
A year test?
No, it was a small class test.
Small class.
So for those of you not at UP, it's a very small class test, just routine, right? Wrote LO1, didn't study for it, partially hungover, wrote it, and I got a 48. And I thought to myself, I was like, if I didn't study and I was partially hungover and I still got 48, it's fine. LO2, so this is the next test, but this was a bigger one. It counted more in weighting, right? Mm. I wrote this test. During the test, I had no idea what I was doing.
Yo.
I couldn't even work through my calculations. I got lost within my own paper. When they sent, we had a tutorial, I think, later that week, just to go through the memo, whatever. I was lost. I looked at what this guy was doing, and I was like, I don't even know what's going on. And it was scary. Those were dark times.
Yeah.
LO3, same thing. Failed. But I tried a little bit harder, but I still ended up failing. LO4, another big one. It counted more in weights. I think this was quite a big one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was the one just before a recess.
Ooh.
I wrote this paper and I studied like decently hard for this one. Wrote this paper and I think on the way back home, the marks came out. The mark for the test, bad failure. Progress mark was like 46, 45%. And I knew I was going home. So I knew my parents were going to ask me. And yo, the stress levels were at an all-time high. And I told them, I was like, be patient with me. There's a year and I'm trying to fix it.
I'm going
to
fix it.
And eventually I did. I did. But it took a lot out of me. That second semester, I never ever want to be in that position again. And someone who helped a lot on that journey, which most people will actually know, he was quite popular. He was a tutor and his name was Tando Oduze.
Oh, Tando Oduze, yay.
He is a lifesaver. He single-handedly found a way to get me through first year and I was forever grateful. And it was simple things. He just told me, and it wasn't a sense of just study harder. That was not his advice to me. He gave me values in terms of like how I should understand work, how I should pitch up to lectures, attend tutorials, and all these things put together helped. Because
These are the ingredients to complex failures.
Exactly.
Because we think like a test is simple. Test is not simple.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into
it. Yeah, so when I was failing a test, I thought, listen, is it because I'm not studying hard enough? But I realized it's all these things in the process that I was not doing. I was not doing correctly. But yeah, talking to him and going to his consultations saved me. And then there was something he told me in that year. I think when I was in first year, he was in third year. So I asked him, I was like, are you stressed about getting into honours? And then he told me very simply, he was like, at the start of third year, I had no doubt that I was going to make honours. And I was like, I want to be in that position. I never want to fight to save a year again. I always want to be sure that I'm going through. And I'm in a position now where I feel relatively comfortable that I will make it through to CTA honours next year. But it was that mindset where I was like, I can and I will, and there's no doubt. Because if I started off with that doubt like I had in first year, second year was going to be the same process. I was going to die first semester and find a way to save myself second semester, but I did not want to be in that position ever again.
Sure. That's it, and it's powerful. I hope the podcast is helping some first years because, like, first years need to have some place telling them they can. Tando was that for you.
Yeah.
You know, and like to have a source to improve your mindset to get you to get off your bum and go and consult. Because that's, in my head, that's a huge lesson from this. Go and consult with the tutors. If you're blessed enough to be in a program that has tutors, please go find a tutor and ask them, dude, just be transparent. Just be real. I don't know what's up. I'm getting 40 right now. I've never gotten a 40 in my life. I matriculated with 6 distinctions and now I'm getting 40. You know, like that's most of us.
Yeah.
Please help. I just don't know where to start. Where should I start? I promise you, like guys like Tando are actually not few and far between. A lot of those ATs and lecturers are willing to give you the guidance.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing. Like when I first, as a first year, I was scared. I was like, I can't go to a lecturer and tell them I don't understand something.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't just rock up to their office and now they must find a way to save me. But then as like he was my first part, right? So he helped a lot. But going to second year, right, when I struggled with stuff, go to a new academic trainee, go to a new lecturer. It's fine. They are there to help you. They literally want to save you. They want to save you. They don't want you to fail in any case. No matter how hard they set the test, they don't want you to fail.
Even
though it doesn't seem like it in the moment. But I promise you, they are there to help. Especially as a first year, ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask anyone. Just go and ask.
Dude, COVID for a lot of us was a huge, disgusting time, but for you it was quite interesting, man. Please, because I think this story, like just when I read it, I was like, whoa, because most people's COVID was like an absolute dog show. What was COVID like for you, and what amazing lessons can people learn from your experience there?
Okay, so COVID was a journey, COVID was a very it's really shaped the rest of my life, if I'm being honest. You know, it was one of those things. So, started off COVID 1 month in, right? And I was like, we didn't have much school at that point. Our teachers were still trying to figure out, like, how do we go forward, okay? I was like, okay, cool. We're just chilling, doing all these nice things at home. And then I was like, no, I want to make change. And just before COVID, I'm going to share something with you guys. I was close to 100 kgs. I was about 95.
You know how crazy it is. Because I'm looking at you now. I'm like, really, bro?
And for those of you who don't know me, I'm really short also. So it doesn't help that I was about 95 odd. It was a sore sight. But just before COVID, I started getting into the fitness thing, all these things. And I had someone also who, like, you're working kind of together, trying these things. And going into COVID, I wasn't sure what was going to happen. Gyms closed, all of these things. And I realized, this is my time. I've got time now. Because people always make this excuse of, I don't have enough time to do certain things. And now we were in a position where time was unlimited. We were sitting at home the whole day. We had nowhere to go.
Yeah.
You literally could not go anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I decided, I was like, I'm going to ramp this journey up. I'm going to take it to the next level. So I started running every day, which wasn't easy in the beginning.
Yeah.
I think first few runs, I struggled to make 1K. I mean, it was tough. Oh,
yeah, I can imagine.
Like, yeah.
You're starting. Running,
yeah, I started time. Outside. I was like, well, let me see if I can even hit 1K. 1K was a challenge in itself.
Sure.
Eventually, I got to that point where I hit 1K. But the thing is, I never gave up, no matter how hard it was. Wow. And it was challenging.
Mm.
Hit that 1K mark. I was like, it's cool. I've made 1K. Kept going for a while. Got to 2Ks. Then eventually I got to 3Ks and I was like, okay, cool. This is what I'm going to do every single day during COVID. And I did do it through winter even. And winter in Mpumalanga is not fun. It's really not fun. Yeah. But I found a way to do it. And just through running and eating well, I changed my diet a lot. It was boring. It was so boring and there was a lot of routine involved, but it was very boring. And I didn't enjoy food, but I was eating for nutrition, not necessarily flavor, but my mom she hated it. My mom loves to cook. And when I told her, make the same thing for me 5 days a week, she lost it. She was like, I don't want to do this for you.
Mm.
And I was like, no, please support me and trust me. This is going to be for the greater good. And I kept working. 7 months down the line, I go and I step on a scale. And even I was shocked. It said 75. I was like, where did all of this go?
That's 30, like how many?
It's like about 20 kgs.
20 kgs.
In 7 months, I was like, where did it go? I was like, I knew I was working hard, but 20 kgs, 7 months, I was like, no ways. And post-COVID, I kept working at it, and now I'm sitting at around 65, which is, you know, I'm happy with that. But through that process, I learned a lot of things. And I think two things that I can take away as the most important factors is discipline and routine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they also go hand in hand. You can't have the one without the other.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've got discipline and routine in your life, it goes forward in so many other things. Like even now at university, pitching up to class is not even a question. I don't ask myself, am I going to come to class?
Mm.
It's routine. You come to class.
Mm.
Tutorials, you go to a tutorial as far as you can because obviously the times, whatever. But it's routine.
Sometimes they like overlap.
Yeah, exactly. But
those stupid things.
But the routine is pitch up to class. It's not even a question of should I not, because once you fall into that cycle
territory.
That cycle is a vicious one to get out of.
Yeah.
Because you'll sit there and you'll contemplate going to class, but going to class should be step number one. And then discipline as well. I mean, discipline in terms of doing a past paper or sitting down and studying. Like, if you sit down and study, then you study.
Mm-hmm.
You don't say, I'm going to study for like 10 minutes, take a 5 minute break. 10 minutes, it doesn't work. Like, you sit down and you study. And it was tough in the beginning, I won't lie. From a studying point of view with discipline, I remember like in high school, I didn't study as much. It was more like I understood some things, I read through the textbook, I was fine.
Yeah, class ready. It was nice.
Exactly. Yeah, and then nice. I got here and I was like, I can study, but it was hard. And now I've gotten to a point where I can study for like 5 hours and I'll be like, I didn't even feel the time go past.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, it's one of those things where I was disciplined enough to sit there for the first hour. I was disciplined enough to sit there for the second hour. By the time you get to the fifth hour, you know you were supposed to study for 5 hours. You've gotten to that point. So yeah, discipline and routine, I think, is crucial to you getting through any degree, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, any degree.
Yeah.
Really any degree. Especially this one, because this one, okay, I guess it's a biased opinion, but I see. So you were running, right? And this gets into how athletes tend to understand this idea of failure really well, because in order to perform at high levels in an athletic pursuit, like even like
you know, running, you know, to get from 1K to now you're probably doing 10Ks. You know,
yeah, I've hit 10Ks before and it's, I never thought I could ever hit that.
Dude, like how insane is that? You've 10X'd your once upon a time impossible,
yeah.
Right? In order to get there, you had to suck so much. You had to quote unquote fail. I bet you probably, so the first time you ran, you set 1K, right?
Yeah.
And then did you do 1K?
No, I failed miserably.
You failed?
Yeah, miserably.
You failed.
And yeah, and even the first time I did eventually hit 1K, mm-hmm. I looked at the time it took and I was like, does this even count? That's crazy. It was so bad. But yeah. It comes back to that thing of you just have to push yourself no matter what comes your way. You just keep pushing.
Mm. And I also think change the language, the people, and the rewards around it. Because you, and maybe this is something that you didn't do at the time, but I think you should have been given a bells, man. You should have been given a bells for literally trying that first time. That first time should have been, because obviously not all of us are blessed, even with, like, you mentioned how your mom supported you with your diet.
Yeah.
Not all of us are blessed with, like, a support structure. But you need to give yourself the grace of falling short and still saying well done. Because had you not tried, you would be nowhere.
Exactly. Like
now you're at 10Ks.
Exactly.
Imagine, now you're looking clean.
Imagine I didn't make that first run. Not even the first 1K, just that first run.
Just run, dude.
All you had to do was make that first step and now look at what you can achieve. Mm. So, yeah.
The first question, dude. Questions are such a, it's like a spiritual experience for us. We are so afraid of doing questions. And I remember Tato, Lawrence Pierre, shout out to my guy. He came in and he spoke about how the reason why we don't do questions is because we don't want to know or be told, like by getting it wrong, that we don't know. And it's like, goodness gracious, I know it's scary. It's scary to dive into a question and get it wrong. Because you will. You absolutely will. You're practicing. But that is how we get better. That's how we go from 1K to 10K. But you have to start the run. You have to do the question. Brother, crystal ball. View it. It's in front of us.
I've got it right here.
Yeah, it's right there. You can see it. If you could be looking at your first year, second year, high school self, what would you tell Roshan back then?
Well, that's a bit of a deep one, eh? I think something I would tell myself back then is you are equipped and like capable of dealing with whatever problems come to you.
Mm.
Because you're going to face problems in life. It's not going to be easy. If your life was easy, I mean, good for you. But most of us, we're going to face problems in life. But I think everyone has to realize that they are capable of dealing with whatever life throws at them.
Mm.
You can never say, I can't, or I don't have what it takes to make it. Like, you've made it so far and you can continue going further. And it's something like I realized even in terms of growth, if you compare yourself entering university and by the time you leave, if you still say you're the same person, I'd be very surprised. I think most people, you change throughout the thing, throughout the process, the journey. So I think, like I said, you are capable of doing whatever life throws in your face.
Yeah, and being nimble enough to, because I think capability, it's so centered around understanding that you're not fixed. You can jump there and back and you can change form and shape. You can lose 20 bloody kgs in 7 months. You can. Guys, yours is fire. If you have not already, please tell us a belief. Like, okay, this is not a video. Share this. Follow this. Share it with other aspiring CAs, guys. Roshan has blessed us with this amazing story, man. This is such a pleasure to have you. I hope it does not end, but that it begins in CASA. Brother, thank you, man.
Thank you, Alunga. It was a privilege to be on your podcast.